This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Welcome, welcome to CBS Mornings on this Wednesday hump day. I'm Gail King.
I'm Tony DeCoppo.
And I'm Vladimir Zutin.
We're going to begin again with the war in Ukraine and the heavy fighting in the east and south of the country. This video shows you Ukrainian soldiers firing rocket launchers in the direction of Russian forces. In the southern city of Mariupol, the Ukrainians say Russia hit a besieged steel works with 35 airstrikes in just 24 hours. That's a lot of firepower. Chris Lipsey is in Ukraine, where he has been talking with people caught up in all of this violence. Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gail. Mariupol is still standing with Ukrainian fighters still holding out, but elsewhere.
As Ukraine fiercely fights back in the east, a new front may be appearing to the country's west. For 2 days, mysterious explosions in Transnistria, the pro-Kremlin breakaway region of Moldova where Russian troops are based. Moldova, without naming names, says the blasts were aimed at creating pretext for straining the security situation. This as the global security situation grows more fragile, with Russia repeatedly firing missiles directly over Ukraine's nuclear plants. What is this? Are they threatening or correcting fire? I'm speechless, said Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, accusing Russia of threatening to turn nuclear power into a weapon on the very anniversary of the Chernobyl explosion that shot a fireball high into Ukraine's sky 36 years ago. Amid the threat of Russian shelling, no light is allowed save for these candles to honor the dead in the nearby town of Slavutich, built from scratch for the evacuees. Even more traumatic than the worst nuclear disaster in history is Russia's invasion today, says Mayor Yuri Fomichev. When a tank battalion occupied the Chernobyl plant, risking yet another catastrophe before retreating after a month. Even Mayor Fomichev himself was taken hostage. Enraged citizens rose up, waving Ukrainian flags. Soldiers fired warning shots and stun grenades, but they refused to disperse until their mayor was freed and their town liberated. Survivors now of not one, but two historic tragedies in Ukraine, says Alexei, who witnessed both the reactor and this war explode. We never expected either of them, he says. Chernobyl 36 years ago, or Russia attacking its brothers today. I can't wrap my head around it. All they can do is remember those lost in one nuclear disaster and hope not to bear witness to another.
And now energy, nuclear or otherwise, is yet another weapon in this war. Today, Russian energy firm Gazprom says it cut off the gas to Poland and Bulgaria because they wouldn't pay in rubles. Ukraine says it's the start of, quote, gas blackmail aimed at Europe. Tony?
It's a worrying development. Chris Lipsey in Ukraine. Chris, thank you very much. Turning now to Washington, where Vice President Kamala Harris has tested positive for the coronavirus, though we're told she's not experiencing symptoms. It comes as Congress debates another round of COVID relief amid surprising new data about how widespread the virus has been in this country. Nancy Cordes is following it for us at the White House. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning, Tony. And we're told that Vice President Harris is feeling well enough to work from home as she isolates. She is expected to remain there at the vice president's residence, not come back to the White House until she tests negative.
Vice President Harris had just arrived at the White House for a meeting with the president Tuesday morning when a routine COVID test came back positive. She got back in her motorcade and headed home.
We have a very, very contagious variant out there.
The president's new COVID response coordinator, Dr. Ashish Jha, says it's impossible to fully protect even major officials from getting COVID.
The goal of our policies should be, obviously, minimize infections whenever possible, but to make sure people don't get seriously ill. The best ways of doing that are making sure people are vaccinated and boosted, as the vice president is, and making sure we have plenty of therapeutics.
After consulting with her physician, Vice President Harris was prescribed and has taken Paxlovid, the Pfizer antiviral pill. The 57-year-old VP had just returned from a trip to Los Angeles and San Francisco. The last time she was in close proximity to the president was last Monday at the White House Easter egg roll. She now joins the roughly 60% of the U.S. population who have contracted COVID. Democrats argue rising case counts underscore the need to pass a bill that would redirect $10 billion in unspent relief funds to help buy more drugs, vaccines, and testing equipment.
I would urge our Republican colleagues to pass COVID relief ASAP. It's very risky for the health of the American people for them to be playing political games with it.
Debate over that bill continues. Meanwhile, some good news for parents. Pfizer yesterday submitted an application for emergency use authorization of its COVID booster for children aged 5 to 11. The FDA says it's going to release a schedule next week for how long it expects it will take to review the data and hopefully approve the request. Vlad?
All right, Nancy Cordes for us. Thank you. In Beijing, health officials have ordered more than 20 million people to get COVID tests this week to try and avoid a full lockdown. That follows more than 100 confirmed infections in China's capital city since the newest outbreak began on Friday. The government hopes to reduce that number to zero, as Elizabeth Palmer reports.
The people of Beijing may not have welcomed the testing order, but they had no choice. And many do believe that these intrusive control measures are keeping them safe. Above all, they want to avoid this, the kind of total lockdown that shut Shanghai for a month with protests when some people ran out of food. On Sunday, with news that the virus was spreading in Beijing, alarmed shoppers headed for supermarkets and stripped the shelves. But as authorities have rolled out testing, they've also promised that stores are being restocked in record time to ward off panic buying. For U.S. businesses in China, the new Beijing restrictions aggravate existing problems with labor shortages, supply lines, and recruitment. Michael Hart is president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Beijing.
In a survey, roughly 70% of companies said they're having a hard time getting executives here. Another 30% said executives who were qualified to come are no longer willing to come to China.
For those already here, a cautionary sight in Beijing, lockdown fences going up around a handful of apartment buildings.
Meanwhile, you've stocked your freezer and your fridge.
I have stocked up and I continue to stock up.
Beijing is now hoping for the best, but braced for the worst. The Japanese financial services company Nomura says that China's zero COVID policy means that more than 340 million people are under full or partial lockdown across the country. For CBS Mornings, Elizabeth Palmer, Tokyo.
Now to that CBS News exclusive, new evidence of a link between two 9/11 hijackers and a man said to be on Saudi Arabia's intelligence agency payroll. We see them together in newly released video turned over to family members of 9/11 victims last month, along with more than 14,000 pages of documents. The evidence obtained from British authorities raises new questions. Actually, renews an old one. Did the Saudi government assist the hijackers on 9/11? The Saudis have always denied that explosive question. Senior investigative correspondent Catherine Herridge has the story.
Less than 2 weeks after 9/11, these boxes of evidence containing personal notes and videos were seized by British police in Birmingham, England. Buried inside, this home video from 2000, now being seen publicly for the first time. The event is described by the 9/11 Commission as a party at the San Diego apartment of two hijackers. While Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midar avoided the camera, Midar can be seen here in the kitchen. Their team would later commandeer Flight 77, slamming it into the Pentagon. The party's host, a Saudi national, Omar al-Bayoumi, who British police arrested after 9/11, and from whom they seized the videos and documents. 3 years after the attack, the 9/11 Commission said there was no credible evidence that Bayoumi believed in violent extremism or knowingly aided extremist groups. Though a newly declassified FBI memo from 2017 reports Bayoumi was on the payroll of Saudi intelligence, a fact that was not confirmed at the time of the 9/11 Commission report.
I call him a facilitator because he helped them out.
Last fall, CBS News sat down with retired FBI agents Danny Gonzalez and Ken Williams, who investigated the hijacker support network. Both now work for the 9/11 families.
He helped them with apartments. He helped them with bank accounts.
He was also an employee of the government of Saudi Arabia.
Among the records, a notepad containing a handwritten drawing of a plane and mathematical equation that an expert said in a court filing could be used to calculate the rate of descent to a target.
Bayoumi is believed to be living in Saudi Arabia. We've tried to reach him through the Saudi embassy. It did not respond to our questions, but said in a statement last year, any allegation that Saudi Arabia is complicit in the September 11th attacks is categorically false. The FBI declined to comment for our reporting, Gail.
Yeah, raising some very troubling questions there. Thank you, Catherine. There is newly released audio today from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy in which the Republican expresses frustration with members of his own party after the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Now, this audio released by the New York Times is reportedly from a phone conversation on January 10th last year between top Republicans. McCarthy says that he's concerned that the rhetoric of some of his colleagues could incite violence, including Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, who he says is putting people, quote, in jeopardy.
These members on either, whatever position you are, calling out other members, that stuff's got to stop, especially in this nature. So when I get off right here, I'm going to call Gaetz. Tension is too high. The country is too crazy. I do not want to look back and think we caused something or we missed something and someone got hurt.
Now, it is not clear if that conversation ever took place, but Gaetz responded last night saying this: this is the behavior of weak men, not leaders. While I was protecting President Trump from impeachment, they were protecting Liz Cheney from criticism. This new audio comes just days after different recordings appear to show McCarthy wanted President Trump to resign following the January 6th attack. McCarthy denies ever telling Mr. Trump he should have resigned.
North Carolina Congressman Madison Cawthorn is again in trouble with the law. Police in Charlotte stopped Cawthorn at the airport yesterday after he tried to carry a loaded handgun through security. Scott McFarlane is on Capitol Hill. Scott, this isn't the first time Cawthorn has done that. What's the story?
Hey, good morning, Vlad. This is the second time he was stopped with a gun at security. The first time was last year at the Asheville Regional Airport. He said that was a mistake. Cawthorn is 26 years old, the youngest member of Congress in his first term, but he's already had a series of run-ins with police and with his colleagues.
We will restore the Second Amendment by repealing...
That was Republican Congressman Madison Cawthorn stumping for President Trump earlier this month. On Tuesday, police said they seized a firearm from Cawthorn at Charlotte Douglas International Airport. The TSA tells CBS News they recovered this loaded 9mm handgun. Police said Cawthorn was cooperative with officers. They cited him with a misdemeanor charge for possession of a dangerous weapon on city property. He could face nearly $14,000 in fines.
You don't have to apologize for your beliefs or cower to a mob.
That was Cawthorn before he was elected to office in 2020. In his short career since, the congressional freshman has been embroiled in a series of controversies.
I got to take your license.
He was charged with driving with a revoked license in early March, then stunned his colleagues with this podcast appearance.
Then all of a sudden you get invited to, like, well, hey, we're going to have kind of a sexual get-together at one of our homes. You should come.
Alleging that he'd been invited to an orgy and watched members of Congress snort cocaine. That drew backlash from fellow Republicans, as did comments referring to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky as a thug.
Madison is wrong. If there's any thug in this world, it's Putin.
North Carolina voters even sought to bar Cawthorn from seeking re-election, arguing that his speech before the January 6th Capitol riot helped incite the violence.
We will be contesting the election.
A federal judge disagreed and blocked that effort last month.
We reached out to Cawthorn for comment. We haven't heard back yet. Though his political story is unique, this incident is not. The TSA tells CBS News it seized about 1,800 guns at airport checkpoints this year, seized 6,000 last year, and 86% of them were loaded. Tony?
Sure. A lot of people carry weapons as a matter of habit or practice. It'd be interesting to hear from Cawthorn himself when the comment is forthcoming. Scott, thank you very much for that report.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.